Well, dear students, it's time to tie everything we've learned about bonds and stocks together into investments for the masses, mutual funds, also known as investment companies, which is, by the way, the legal term. Mutual funds are very popular, and you hear all about them in the media and advertising and the like, but you very rarely hear their legal name, and that's investment company. And I think that's unfortunate, because I think the term investment company is a much better way to describe what these things are. Yeah, I get the idea behind mutual, a lot of different investors get together and pool their money together, but what is the company doing for you? They're making investments on your behalf. So I like investment company better. And there's an old industry saying, which I think is very apropos, suitable, mutual funds will bore you to wealth. Right? They're not sexy. They're not exciting. Well, some of them are. They're the ones you want to stay away from. But they do the job. And if we choose a good mutual fund, or maybe a few, then we let the mutual fund do its job of making the investments for us, and we sit back and make sure we get our $50 or $100 a month or more, if we can afford it, into the mutual fund through our paycheck or through our checking account. Cool? Yeah. So let's get started on slide number two. Let's see here. Let's get started on slide number two. What is a mutual fund? Well, to review, it's an investment chosen by people who pool their money to buy stocks, bonds, or other financial securities. As we said, the legal term is investment company, but you won't hear that unless you work out in the industry. What do we get as investors? Two wonderful aspects, characteristics: professional money management and diversification. Yes, both are very good things. Some professional money managers aren't that great, but that's your job, and my job is to go out and find the good ones. Or if you feel you need the help of a financial advisor, letting the financial advisor make recommendations regarding which mutual funds to invest in. And diversification. Don't let anybody tell you diversification is not a good idea. It is. Some people will say you really need to be more concentrated if you want to make money quickly, and they're absolutely right. But you can also lose money really quickly, too. So that's why we like diversification. And each fund has a specific objective: growth of capital, income, a balanced approach between growth of your money and income from your money. And there are over 12,000 to choose. Wait a minute. Do you have 12,000 different choices when you walk down the breakfast aisle in the supermarket? I know it seems like it sometimes, but no. Are there 12,000 different types of cars out there? How come there are 12,000 different mutual funds? It just doesn't make sense. Well, we'll discuss that later on in our next presentation. Suffice to say, there is tremendous competition for your investment dollars. And so there are myriad of choices for you to go to, which makes it even worse for people trying to make a decision. That's why I like companies that have fewer, not more, mutual funds. But that's my personal opinion. Other people say, oh no, I want to have lots of different choices. Fine. And as we said, many people will choose mutual funds for their retirement account investments, either through their 401k or 403b, if it's an employer-sponsored plan, or maybe your traditional IRA or your Roth IRA from your checking account, or a regular account where you just want to build wealth in a regular account, or maybe a college education account, an educational savings plan. Yeah, there are health savings plans. Most all of them are going to be giving you the option of investing in mutual funds, if not the only option to invest in. Slide number three. Here's my great graph. Don't you impressed with my artistic ability? Yes. So here we are, dear students. We're the little people, and more of them are women, because women are getting the idea that don't count on the men. They don't even do as well as the women. And we give our millions of dollars every month, every sometime every paycheck, to the people in the top hats. These are the mutual fund managers. And more of them are women. Why? Because, as we said, women are better investors. Yes, they are. And so millions of people giving billions of dollars creates these huge pools of funds, mutual funds. And I know it looks like a potato. My apologies. It's supposed to be a pool. And then what do the mutual fund managers do with it? Well, they do the investing for you. If they invest in stocks, it's called a stock mutual fund. If they invest in bonds, it's called a bond mutual fund. If they invest in the short-term cash instruments, then it's called a money market mutual fund. But usually, you don't hear the last two words. You just hear people say money market. But it's really a money market mutual fund. And if they decide they're going to have a balanced approach between stocks and bonds, then they create a balance fund. But there are just innumerable choices out there. But just these are the four main categories, folks. And in the illustrations, in the illustrations that we do for this chapter, we chose a balanced mutual fund. For chapter 11 on bonds, we chose a bond mutual fund. We saw what bonds can do for us over the long term. In chapter 12, we saw a stock mutual fund that invested in stocks, and we saw how stocks can do for us. And in this chapter, we choose a balanced fund so that we can eat well with our stocks and sleep well with our bonds. Balanced funds, for many people, are not a bad choice. Personally, when you're in your 20s and 30s, I think they're too conservative. But that's why there's chocolate and vanilla, and some people like strawberry. If you're really, really worried, but you do want to invest for growth, a balanced fund might be a good choice for you. We shall see that there are many, many other choices in our next presentation, and that's why there are so many different mutual funds. Slide number 4. Why should investors purchase mutual funds? Well, as we said, there are two wonderful reasons. Professional money management, you have to determine as a potential investor who is the fund's manager. Be careful. It's not as bad as it used to be, but managers would change often, like professional athletes or like movie stars. They called it the star, they still do, the star system, where one person makes all the choices. And sometimes that works out really, really well, in the case of Peter Lynch, and sometimes it works out really, really poorly, in the case of Charles Stedman. My humble opinion, you look for an experienced management team, a team of people that work together but make their own decisions. Why? Because you get that team approach, but you get the individual's conviction, their courage of their conviction, where everybody else says, "Oh, that's ridiculous. That's going to blow up. It's going to fall down. And this guy or gal says, "No, no, no, you don't understand. You're not seeing this." And they go ahead and buy it, and it turns out to be, maybe a really good thing. So that's why I like teams. And more mutual funds are choosing to move to the team approach, which is a good thing. Cool. Diversification. The second major reason we use mutual funds is diversification. Investors' funds are pooled together and used to purchase a variety of investments, and this variety provides some safety that is difficult for individual investors to obtain on their own. Your $50 buys 25 cents of IBM and 30 cents of Home Depot and 40 cents of McDonald's. You understand? Now, you don't have to worry about that. That they take care of that for you, all the accounting. But you know that with your $50, you're buying 120 different stocks, right? So if one company disappears, you see a little blip in your mutual fund results. And the last factor that we don't discuss very often, but is very important for the vast majority of us people trying to live their lives without having to worry about our investments, is the PETA factor. And I wish I would have made this up. I didn't. It's from the Wealthy Barber. It stands for pain in the factor, right? Pain in the horse factor. And it's true. Once we have chosen a mutual fund, then it's actually very easy for us because they do all the work. Of course, we're paying them, they're charging us for that work. The trick is picking the first mutual fund, because there are thousands to choose from. Where do you even start? Do you listen to the advertisements? Do you listen to your brother-in-law, the so-called expert? Do you pay for, because you're going to wind up paying, advice, professional advice? Do you do your reading? Do you take Business 123, Introduction to Investments, and do a whole lot of research and find the ones that speak to you the best? You decide. Uh-huh. And that's why mutual funds are so cool, because you can do your own research, or you can choose somebody to do it for you. And then there's nothing. Once that's done, you don't really have to. You know, you check them out every 6 months, every year. Don't make changes quickly, because what I like to do, what we're going to do, is we're going to look at the long term. Look at funds that have been around for 20, 30, 50 years or longer. Why? Because they've shown that they can do well in good times and bad times. As we said back in chapter 11, I think, don't tell me how well you did during the good times. I'm not interested. I want to know how well you did when the organic matter hit the ventilating device. Because it's going to happen. We don't know when. We don't know how. We know it's going to happen. That's all. And so I want somebody who's done well during those times, which means they haven't completely fallen into a pool of tears and disappeared, which is what happens to a lot of mutual funds. Well, many mutual funds are called burying the evidence. They are merged into other mutual funds so that the past horrible performance of a certain mutual fund disappears. And we bury the evidence. And many companies have done that, folks. And it's not right, in my humble opinion. Look for companies that have not done that. And certainly look for mutual funds that have been around for decades and have done well in good times and bad times. Okay, enough of that. Let's continue. Slide number 5. Look at the growth of the mutual fund industry. In 1940, finally, the folks in Congress got together, played nice in the sandbox, and created the Investment Company Act of 1940. There were already 70 mutual funds in action, working and doing their job. But many of the states were very leery about these things, and the IRS was very leery about these things. And they would say, wait a minute, why aren't we taxing you on your investment gains? And the mutual funds would say, well, because we're doing it, we're investing for other investors. Go tax them. And so it was a little tricky there for a while. And finally, the Congress said, no, finally, we have an act that addresses the mutual fund industry. We call it the Investment Act of 1940. And it set in stone and has been basically the mutual fund company, the industry itself. The industry has changed a lot, but the regulatory structure, the law, has not changed much. So it shows that the folks in Washington can play nice and get things done. So there were 70 in existence. 30 years later, 350. 1980, 600. 1990, look at that. From 1980 to 1990, 600 to 2,000. Yeah, and then from 1990 to 2000... 9,000. It went from 2,000 to 9,200 in the year 2000. And the last 20 years, we've added the extra 3,000. So we're now up to 12,089 as of December 31st, 1999. That is from the Investment Company Institute 2020 Factbook, which comes out in May. So you don't really know the previous year until about May or June. And so the industry has exploded in terms of number of offerings for you, which some people would say is a great thing. Other people say, that's too much information, which it is. I mean, I'll never personally, that's one of the cool things about being in the industry, you'll never learn everything about all the different mutual funds, stocks, bonds, there's just too many of them. So you have to follow your nose and see where you are led to, which companies speak to you the best. Get good referrals, do your research. Maybe if you want to, you find a fund advisor who will help you, a financial advisor. Yeah, that's the problem with mutual funds, as we'll see when we get to our next presentation and then after that too. So slide number 6, how do we purchase mutual funds? Well, you can do it through a broker, through a financial advisor, through a wealth manager, as it's sometimes called, asset manager, or directly from the investment company. But either way, in my humble opinion, the bestest way to purchase your mutual funds is through automatic contributions. Because we say we're going to get around to investing, and then everything's happening and stuff. Well, I need that money for the car now. And the kids need orthodontia, and here comes the quinceañeras. So the best way is to simply start putting $50, $100 a month through your payroll, through your checking account. Remember we talked about dollar cost averaging. Sometimes you're buying high, sometimes you're buying low. You don't care. You just keep putting that money in. Cool? And then, how do you sell it? Well, if you have a broker, a financial advisor, a wealth manager, you call them up and say, I want to sell some. I want to get some money back. Or you go directly to the mutual fund website or call the mutual fund and they will send you a check. Or you could even have it electronically deposited into your checking account. And the absolute bestest way, in my humble opinion, is through an automatic withdrawal into your checking account. So here's the deal, folks. Here's the deal, okay? You automatically invest 50 or $100 per month for 30 years or more. More if you increase it every year, 110, 120. And then you automatically withdraw $2,000 or maybe $3,000 per month for the rest of your life. Does that sound interesting? Oh, wait a minute. Did I mention there are no guarantees? Yes, always be sure to read the fine print. So what you've done is basically created your own annuity. And so that now you have as we'll see when we'll get into the next chapter, you can set it up so that you take out this much and you get maybe a little bit more than that, so your interest, your income actually grows over time. Yes. Because remember, as we said with annuities, here's what the life insurance company wants you to do. They don't want you to take all that money and you've accumulated all your lifetime. No. Because they don't want you to manage it, because you could wind up with mediocre returns over the rest of your life. Instead, give it to us and we will guarantee that you get mediocre returns for the rest of your life. Yes, dear students, never trust an insurance company with your investments. And if you need to, it makes more sense, in my humble opinion, to hire a financial advisor than it does to give the insurance company the money, because you will, I don't know, it's going to be an exception that proves the rule, but you'll do a whole lot better if you do it yourself, make your own annuity. And this is the way to do it. Cool? Sound exciting? I hope so. I hope so. Okay, so now let's take a look at fees. Very important part of mutual funds are the fees, because the mutual fund industry, they're not alone. They're nothing. They can't hold a candle to the life insurance companies, but they do their best to make it difficult for you to understand how you're being charged. I mean, most people understand that they're being charged. Yes, they do. They just don't really understand how. Well, typically, mom mutual funds are going to charge you based on annual operating expenses, because it costs money to run a mutual fund. This is charged yearly based on a percentage of the fund's asset value. This is how the mutual fund finances their operations. And they range from less than 0.5% to 2% or more, although that's very rare. Usually it's about 1% or so, depending on the mutual fund. So what does this mean? If you had a mutual fund that charged 0.5%, that's 50 cents for every $100 you have in the account. If it charged 1%, you'd have $1 for every $100 in the account. If it's 2%, it'd be $2. Now, does that sound like a lot of money? At first, it might, but know this. It's a whole lot less than the life insurance companies and the banks are charging. How do we know? Well, it's difficult, because the banks and the life insurance companies at most of the time are not required to show you how much they are making off of you. Whereas the mutual funds are, thanks to the Investment Company Act of 1940, we are given a prospectus that describes how we're being charged. Does anybody read it? No! It's written with the legalese that makes sure that you'll never read it, but it's very useful in case you have insomnia at night. You can take your mutual fund prospectus to bed with you, and very quickly you'll be snoring soundly. And some mutual funds have extremely low fees. In fact, there are some mutual funds out there that are charging basically nothing. How do they do that? Well, stick with us, dear students. And why can they charge it? Again, we'll discuss it more in the next presentation. And some mutual funds come with a sales load, or another name for that is sales commission. Now, what was this meant to be? Originally, it was meant to compensate or use, and still is, the financial representative who sold or recommended the fund to the investor. But because commissions have become a taboo subject, and ooh, you never want to pay commissions, there are other ways that now the financial advisors and the representatives and the brokers and the wealth managers charge you, which are sometimes more expensive than if you just paid the darn upfront fee, the sales commission, and be done with it. Many funds now charge no commission, and those are called no-load funds. And there are a couple other names for them, as we'll see on the next presentation. But be careful, because if a no-load fund does not have low annual operating expenses, it can wind up costing you more than the one that did have a sales commission that you held for the long time and it had lower annual operating expenses. So is it going to be easy to figure out your fees? Once you've done it a few times, yes. Because there are only a few categories of the way mutual funds charge people and the way they compensate the financial advisors. There are dozens of permutations and combinations, but they all fit neatly into about four categories, which we're going to take a look at right now on slide 8. Originally, the only mutual funds out there were sold through brokers, and they had a front-end load. They eventually came to be known as Class A shares. They typically, but not always, have lower annual operating expenses. So you paid $5 for every $100 or $3 for every $100 that you put into the mutual fund. And as the amount you put into the mutual fund or your account gets larger, that percentage goes down and down and down until finally it winds up being zero and you don't pay any more upfront fees. And these, it turns out, for those people who are interested in having an advisor, these typically wind up being the best choice over the long term. Now, if you're the kind of person who buys and sells and wants to move your money around mutual funds every 6 months or a year, you definitely want to stay away from these things because you'll just get destroyed by your annual operating expense. I mean, the upfront commission fee, not the annual operating expenses. So they have their place for people who are long-term prudent investors but want the help of a financial advisor. Make sense? Well, as we said, commissions, front-end loads, front-end commissions became taboo. They were not spoken of in polite company. Well, the brokers are not stupid, right? They said, okay, well, we'll create the Class B shares. You don't want an upfront fee? No problem. For you, we have the back-end fee. What? Wait a minute. You're going to hit me up front or in the back? No. The back-end fee only applies if you don't hold on to the funds for 4, 5, 6 years. After that, you don't pay a back-end fee. It's called a contingent deferred sales charge. Isn't that a great name? Yeah, it starts off at 4% the first year, then 3, 2, 1, and after 4 years, you don't pay any back-end fee. The same thing happens with annuities, but they usually start around 25%. And take 25 years or so to get down to zero. But the Class B shares turned out not very popular, so we don't want a upfront fee, we don't want a back-end fee. How about Class C shares? Well, the Class C shares used to be called no-load broker funds, but the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, says they can't do that anymore, so you have to call them load funds. What happened? Well, they didn't have an upfront fee. They didn't have a back-end fee. Some of them have a 1% charge if you leave within a year, but you shouldn't do that. Mutual funds, you want at least to leave them there at least a few years, 5 years or so. So, great. Sounds great, right? No upfront fee, no back-end fee. What happens? Well, they have a higher annual fee, and every year some of that annual fee gets paid to the brokers over time, and if you're a broker, you're going to make more from the Class C shares than the Class A shares, especially if the client has a lot of money, because if they go with the Class A shares, they don't pay as big an upfront fee as a percentage of what they put in. Right, so they're not allowed to be called no-load funds. They have to be called load funds, except the load is amortized. You like that 50-cent word? It means it's spread out over 10 years or sometimes longer. Okay, so we don't want to load. What do? But we still want an advisor. Well, advisors have what are called Class F or Class I or Class FI, or they go by various different letters depending on which mutual fund you go to. But now they are often called clean shares. Doesn't that sound better? It sounds nice. Clean shares. Well, folks, they can be just as messy and dirty as the others, because typically if you go through a broker now, they will say, oh, no, we're not your brokers. No, 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 no. We're your wealth managers. And you don't pay an upfront fee. You don't pay a back-end fee. You pay low annual operating expenses, except we got an extra 1 or 2%. What was that, Ms. Broker? What did you say? We got an extra 1 or up to 2% per $100 forever to manage the account, the wealth management fee. Oh, folks, you know, if you're a broker, this is what you want your clients to do, because you're going to be charging them forever. And I'll tell you right now, I have no clients that have these. I will never, I mean, unless the person was, I don't know, I would try to explain to them. I'd say, hey, you need to take Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, Chapter 14, 13, or you need to sit in on my Business 123, Introduction Investments class, Chapter 4, because you got to understand how you're being charged. These things will charge you far more money over the long term. That, again, we assume that you're a long-term buy and hold shareholder that wants to hold on to the money for 10 or more years for retirement, or maybe for the kids' education or buying a house or something. So you got to be careful, right? And if you do need if you do need the help of a financial advisor, stick with those who charge the upfront fee, because it's going to be cheaper. And if you don't believe me, take Business 123, where we actually run the numbers. And I can do it for you, folks, if you want to see the difference between the Class A and the Class F over the long term, especially with larger numbers. It makes it's much more pronounced when you have a pretty big nest egg. But with a small nest, just putting $50 a month away, it takes a long time for that amount to become pronounced. But when it does, it's severely pronounced. And this is, 10, 15, 20 years into your investing career. And you wind up, as we say, leaving a lot of money on the table. Excuse me. Now, the last category, sometimes called true no-load funds. Huh? True no-load funds? Well, that's what the financial media has called them, true no-load funds. No upfront fee, no back-end fee, no high annual operating expenses, and no management fees. But wait, I mean, that means you're going to have to do it on your own. That's right. You need to do your own research. Now, I guess you could pay somebody an hourly rate. There are financial representatives. They're actually called certified financial professionals. But they charge an outrageous amount of money to do stuff I saw one of my students came up to me and showed me the things that they gave her, the materials, and it was $3,000 for a book and CDs or DVDs are not worth, $30-$40. And she felt really violated. So, you know, get a good, again, at the bottom of the story, bottom line, get a good referral if you're looking for help in making your own decisions. But, I mean, not making your own decisions, getting help to make decisions and recommendations. But if this stuff is kind of exciting and interesting and piques your curiosity, Business 123, Introduction to Investments, yes, we'd love to see you. By the way, even a true no-load fund, which has no upfront fee, no back-end fee, no higher annual operating expenses, from paying the brokers, they're called 12B1 fees. You don't have to remember that. But it doesn't mean that it might not wind up costing you more in fees if they have higher annual operating expenses, the management fee, as it's called. Okay, so are you thoroughly confused? I know. Maybe you want to print out this slide because it's going to be on the exam. And why is it going to be on the exam, Piano? Because you are the financial guru. You are the investment guru for your friends and family and coworkers. And it's a serious responsibility, and you can't let them down. You have to be able to explain to them how they're being charged. And when that jerk in the three-piece suit with the Rolex on his arm comes in and tries to explain to you what our insurance company is doing for you 401k participants, we have the greatest funds out there, and you start asking them, wait a minute, how come this index fund has a annual expense that's 10 times more than, say, Vanguard or Fidelity? And he'll go, nah, 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 nah. He won't know what to say. And you are going to look like a genius. You are going to look brilliant. And your friend, your co-workers are going to say, boy, are you smart. Where did you learn that? And you know what you're going to say, right? You're going to tell them, Business 121, Financial Planning and Money Management, Business 123, Introduction to Investments at Southwestern Community College. See, I wash your back, you wash my back. Okay, dear students. So now, what are we ready for? We are ready to do our best to get our arms around the mutual fund industry. Very difficult to do because it's an 800-pound marshmallow. And we will look at the major types of mutual funds from the most riskiest to the least riskiest, and then discuss index funds and ETFs, exchange-traded funds, which are the greatest and newest and most fabulous modern-day a-go-go way to invest, but have their disadvantages also. No investment is perfect, dear students. Every investment has advantages and disadvantages. See you in our next presentation.